So, Rose, when we talked last week, we talked about the governor hinting at a mask mandate and speculation about what phase three would look like. And the verdicts are in on both.
And the verdict is no phase three. The governor decided to let phase two extend for 3 more weeks. I think everyone's heard that by now. People were waiting with bated breath, and he was kind of like, no, not yet. And their big concern is the rate of positives in all that all those cases. You know, people will say, well, you do more testing, you find more cases. That's true. But the point of it is that if you're doing lots of testing and you find more cases, but the number of cases is only like 3% of all the tests, well, that would be good. But we're hovering like 9%, 10%. It was down to 8% one day. But it really, it's right around 9, 10%. And that's a lot of people. Think about it. It's 1 in 10 people being tested is positive. So many of those folks are pre-symptomatic or asymptomatic, and they don't know they're positive yet. And they go out and they infect family members. I know you're from Texas, Helen. There was a piece in the Houston media about a family that had a surprise birthday party, and 18 members of that family ended up positive for coronavirus, including someone who is currently being treated for cancer, and the grandparents and the grandfather is looking like he's going to die. These things can spread very insidiously just from being at a party. So I think that was the thing that Governor and Secretary Cohen were trying to emphasize to people, is that really we're going to keep things kind of tight for another couple weeks. We're going to encourage everyone to wear masks.
It really felt like the governor was revving up the troops when he made that mask mandate announcement. On hand, there was the president of the Nursing Association, CEO of Atrium Health. We've been hearing lots about studies supporting the role of masks in slowing the coronavirus spread. It felt like a pep rally of sorts for masks, because when it comes down to it, I guess compliance is sort of on the honor system.
It's really kind of fascinating. Like, it is essentially an honor system. The governor put the onus for enforcement not on law enforcement, which I think in this moment where people are saying that law enforcement is involved in too much enforcement out there, right? Instead, it's on the business owners. So, you know, if you have a hair cutting salon and someone comes in and they're refusing to wear a mask, that's when, you know, you as the hair owner can now call the police and say, this guy's trespassing, he won't wear a mask. So it's on the business owner. But for the rest of us, most of the time, it's kind of an honor system. And, you know, and I think even just with this honor system, you're seeing pushback, right? So I think that, you know, it's trying to get sort of that peer pressure among the population. I will say I am seeing more people wearing them. I was at the legislature for a couple days this past week, and, you know, there were too many people in that building who were not wearing masks. However, there were more of them wearing masks than I've seen. And that was a little bit heartening to me. So, you know, it's going to be a process. And I think when you there was a great study in Health Affairs that came out last week, you know, correlation is hard to prove. But they did note that in states that have had mask mandates and have had them for longer, the rates of spread have slowed.
Lots going on at the legislature this week, and you have an article that addresses a hot topic, or rather looks at how lawmakers are addressing a hot topic, and that's restrictions on visitors at hospitals during the pandemic.
Well, you know, early on in the pandemic, hospitals said, we don't want visitors. And then the governor gave them some executive power in his executive order to ban visitors. And then the federal government promulgated rules for nursing homes not to have visitors. So there's all kinds of healthcare facilities that have stayed closed to visitors. However, you know, and I talk to healthcare providers, and they will say that the hardest thing is watching some of these patients die by themselves. It's been just heart-wrenching and gutting. And so there are now a lot of folks out there who are upset that they've not been able to see their loved ones. I mean, I'm one of them. I haven't been able to see my 92-year-old mother since February. So there was a bill that's been floating around the legislature. It's No Patient Left Alone. You know, you heard these just agonizing testimonials from people about not being able to be with a loved one who is in the hospital. You know, I spoke to several lawmakers who, you know, one lawmaker, her husband had a heart attack and she wasn't able to be there with him. I spoke to another lawmaker who his uncle died in a nursing home and only one family member was able to be there. So, you know, these things are they're tragic. So the legislature is pushing. You do see hospitals loosening these regulations somewhat. Someone from the Healthcare Association, which used to be known as the Hospital Association, told me that, you know, we have federal regulations that require us to allow patients to have visitors, except when we say that there's a medical or clinical reason to limit visitation, like a pandemic. But he made the note that, you know, it's always better to have a visitor with the patient. You know, they can help someone get to the bathroom. They can, you know, call the nurse when there's a problem. You know, it's a double-edged sword. But what this hospital association guy told me was that the big concern early on was, you know, visitors being in a room where there was a virus floating around, but also not having enough PPE, personal protective equipment, to protect these people when they're in the hospital. I mean, there wasn't enough for the healthcare providers, much less the visitors. And now that we're better equipped with PPE around the state, they're feeling more comfortable with allowing visitors in. And they're doing it very restrictively. Like, you can have one person with you only. You know, it has to be one person at a time. Can't leave the room. So there's a bunch of restrictions. Now, when it comes to nursing homes, this is still a harder pull, because you get the virus in a nursing home and it just rips through. The head of the North Carolina Senior Living Association, now that's a trade group that represents more assisted living, adult care homes, not skilled nursing facilities. He said he was talking to one of his members and he said, once you have an outbreak in your facility, it turns your life upside down. And these facility owners will do anything, is what he said, to keep it from happening again. So he came to the legislature and said, please don't make us have visitors. Right? So there's two sides of this coin. It was interesting. We published this story about visitation, and then somebody got on as a commenter and said that her mom has been in a nursing home, and they designed a visitation screen out of wood plexiglass and surrounded with sheets of plastic. So although hearing people might be an issue, she said that residents and families can now schedule visits. And so that's you know, I think there's going to be, we're going to start seeing more and more creative solutions that keep, that balance, you know, the social needs of these residents and patients, but address the healthcare concerns. And I'll be really interested to see how that goes.
Lawmakers also tackled another big issue, Medicaid. You were up burning the midnight oil. Can you give us an update?
It was a fascinating bill. I have seen so many Medicaid bills that have these big fat poison pills in them and big fat kind of like, you know, screw you, you know, provisions in them. This bill, when it finally crossed the finish line, had none of them. It was the cleanest Medicaid bill I've ever seen. It refinanced Medicaid for the coming year. It sets a deadline for Medicaid transformation, which is the transformation from fee-for-service to managed care, to go live next July 1st. There had been penalties if DHHS took extra time after July 1st. They took those out. It had extra money for testing and tracing in it. It had money to upgrade the computer systems and had enough of it. I mean, it was, you know, it lengthened the length of time that contracts are with the managed care companies are for, to from 3 years to 4 years. And what Josh Dobson, who he's from up in Nebo, you know, up in Marion County, he was the guy. He's about to leave the legislature. So I think he just went no holds barred, right? He just went and negotiated the hell out of this thing. And got everyone to just come to the table and say, you need to give something up. You need to give something up. And the thing that the governor gave up was Medicaid expansion. What Dobson said to me was that, you know, we've tried it. He was one of the sponsors of the Republican-sponsored Medicaid expansion bill that they started running that bill in 2017. They ran it in 2018. They ran it in 2019. And it never got anywhere because as many people have said, there just is no Medicaid expansion bill that members of the Senate are willing to get behind. And so, you know, Representative Dobson was like, we looked at reality and said, if we're going to get the transformation done, that's got to get off the table. So it ended up off the table. I think it's going to be a big disappointment to a lot of people. Some of the folks I talked to, even the people in the division or the Department of Health and Human Services, they're very disappointed. Advocates are disappointed. And I know that the governor has kept saying that Medicaid expansion is the way to go. I think that was the big concession that he made. It's expected that Cooper will sign this bill. It got passed last night, just before midnight. And the last hurdle was in the Senate. The House had added a little bit more money for testing and tracing. You know, into the bill, and so had to send it back to the Senate one last time for concurrence, and the Senate concurred just around 11:30, and then I was able to finish my story. You know, right? Like, you know, I'm sitting and waiting and waiting, and then, you know, once they did that, I was like, all right, now I can write the rest of it. You know, because you never know what those bills are going to have until they are out of the building and on their way to the governor.
Gosh, a lot of compromise.
There's a lot of compromises in that bill. A lot of compromises. Like fully funding things, you know, I think the Senate was always like sort of nickel and diming DHHS. They took out the provision that would have forced DHHS to move to a rural county an hour out of Raleigh. That went away. The House members, you know, gave up some things in terms of you know, I think, frankly, I think like the House kind of gave up the least just because they'd been the most willing to cut deals. And then the governor has had to give up expansion. So it's just been, it was really interesting to see, like, right, isn't this how governance is supposed to work? It's like politics is, that Dobson said to me this week, like, politics is the art of the possible, and this is what was possible.
Your staff this week also revisited dentists. A number of issues are happening as dentists work to reopen their practices in what still feels like a very high-risk environment.
You know, they were closed for so long, but people need to have their teeth cleaned and they need to have that cavity filled. So there's some economists who think that the dentists are a really good bellwether about, you know, who comes back and, you know, like the economy coming back, like when do patients come back to dentists? So it's really interesting. And then there's a whole fight about how many dental hygienists dentists can supervise. And we didn't even get into the whole question of like, why do dentists need to supervise hygienists at all? There's plenty of states where hygienists are much more independent actors. So, we spoke earlier in the pandemic to a dental hygienist who, if I remember correctly, has multiple sclerosis. So she was like, I don't know if I want to go back to work. So what does that mean for someone who's got a professional degree but now cannot use it? You know, so these are some really thorny questions for folks to have to work through. You know, dentistry is really very interesting, and I'm really excited that we have somebody who's focusing on that.
Definitely a busy week. The hamster wheel never slows down. What is North Carolina Health News working on for next week?
We have a look at how masks have become so politicized, the mask wars. We have a look at how CARES Act funding came to rural hospitals, and we did a deep analysis, and we dug through a federal database with 4,000 lines in it to find some information. And a story that we've got to get out there before the end of Pride Month, and it's looking back at the HIV pandemic and how it compares to COVID.